I'm Dr. Scott Lyons, and you're watching or listening to The Gently Used Human. Ever wonder what lies behind the curtain of the nutritional wellness industry? Or considered how the act of cooking is not just preparing a meal, but also a profound expression of self-care and creativity? Today I'm joined by registered dietitian Desiree Nielsen, an expert in the world of plant-based nutrition and author of several best-selling cookbooks, including her latest book, Plant Magic. Together, we'll dissect the impact of social media on diet trends, the importance of tailoring nutrition to the individual, and the need for a critical eye towards the wellness narratives that dominate our culture. Desiree offers her insights into the complexities of nutrition, debunking common myths, and teaching us how to sift through the noise to find evidence-based advice that truly benefits our health. Join us as we serve up insight and laughter, proving that the best meals are not just about what's on the plate, but also about the conversations that happen around the table. Let's dig in. All right, Desiree, welcome to The Gently Used Human. It's so magical to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to chat with you.
I am too. And for those of you who do not yet know Desiree, she is the plant-based dietitian to the Canadian stars. She is a magical... I mean, your books are really great, by the way.
Thank you.
I happen to know someone who has your book and in my kitchen. And we have, I mean, it's rock star. I'm actually excited to start this conversation with each of us telling the world how we both became vegetarians or vegan.
Ooh.
Yeah, because we each have very bizarre stories of how it came to be. So why don't you go first?
Okay.
I love your story. So
okay, so... particularly because I think people look at, you know, like plant-based, vegetarian, vegan folks as being, you know, like, oh, we're like the best and holier than thou. The honest truth is that I went vegetarian for a boy when I was a teenager. We played in the same band and he played sax. And
of course.
I just thought he was like, of course, the sax player. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just thought he was like so cool. And we were talking and he said that he was a vegetarian. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm vegetarian too. That's so awesome. thinking if we had this like shred of something else in common outside of this band. No dice. But the vegetarianism stuck.
It did. Oh, that's... Do you know where he is now?
I have no idea. And the funny thing is that I tell this story now. And if he were randomly to stumble upon, he'd be like... Oh, really? He probably had no idea. I was trying to play it all cool.
I love that vegetarianism could be like the thing to get a hookup or essentially like connect more. That's great. And so you've essentially done plant-based since this dude.
Yeah, I was, you know, like straight up vegetarian, like ate cheese and eggs. Yeah. And since I was a teenager and then in my 30s, I went fully vegan. Like sort of was a very gradual process because I was one of those vegetarians who said, oh, I could be vegan except for the cheese. Like I had to get to that point where I was like, that is no longer true. I've figured out cashew cream. Like the cheese has gotten a lot better. Like I'm in. I'm all in.
The cheeses have gotten better. And have you spent much time in Australia?
I haven't. Not in years.
Oh my God. They have their cashew cheese game down and macadamia nut cheese down. They have their nut cheese down.
Australia's always been a very forward-thinking place from like a dietary perspective. Like so many of our actual clinical nutrition diets, like low glycemic diet and the low FODMAP diet for IBS, one originated there and the other just got the research on it just exploded because of Australian institutions. I don't know what they got going on there. They're just like a very health focused or nutrition focused country, but like they're totally a leader.
Oh my gosh. They also have something that I've coined the garlic mafia, which is organic garlic is like $72 a kilo. And it's like, I came up this whole, because I got stuck there during COVID and I was in Australia for almost a year because the planes weren't going. And I became very intimate with the cashew cheese there and navigating the price of organic garlic, which clearly at that point is run by a whole mafia.
You know, I'm trying to think in this, I should know better. I do like so much grocery shopping. I was like, how much is organic garlic? I don't think it's that bad.
No, no, nowhere else in the world have I seen garlic that expensive. Truly, I was like coming up with like all the reasons why it could possibly be that expensive. And it's mafia. It's full on mafia. That's what it is.
I was like, soil quality? I don't know. I bet your mafia. I feel like the simplest explanation, you know, is often the most accurate. So absolutely has to be a racket.
Garlic mafia. I've only been recently getting into the olive oil mafia, which is like its whole other like, you know, story about like how some countries are like mixing olive oil and canola oil. And it's like whole mafia scene with the olive oil. Oof, it's dicey out there.
I used to work with this Italian chef and he said, you know, I love my country, but we are all thieves and gangsters. And he was talking about olive oil.
Yeah, he was talking about olive oil.
Yeah. He was like, so much of it is a scam.
Yeah. That's maybe another podcast, y'all. We'll get some experts in here to like deal with the olive oil crisis we are now navigating. But in the meantime, we are talking about plant-based magic, which is also the name of your new book, Plant Magic.
It is. I do feel like plants are magic. Cooking is magic.
Yeah. What about its magic for you?
Well, you know, you take these seemingly disparate ingredients. Mm-hmm. I'm not very inspired by like a raw carrot, but then you just a little bit of heat, a little bit of salt, like a little bit of spice. And all of a sudden it becomes this completely other thing. You know, I think particularly around healthy eating. Yep. When people think about healthy eating, like they think about like, oh yeah, like buying that you know, sad bag of baby carrots and just like munching them at their desk all day. And I was like, I would rather die than do that. You know, like you can, with just a few minutes and a little bit of advice or a recipe, you can turn something so simple and maybe not that inspiring into something that you crave. And I think that's magic. Yeah. It's everyday magic.
That is magic. I've talked about it in a previous episode about my first foodgasm. When I found out food could taste good. And like, I think I just ate. I mean, I was a dancer, so eating was always restricted anyways. Mm-hmm. And so like, I really overrode any taste for quote unquote nutritional needs. And years later in my life, when I found my first, this place in Bali, actually, which was plant-based. And I just was like, my whole body was like shaking in this gasmic delight. And I fell in love with food right there and then, I will say.
And see, and I was so lucky because I started out in life that way. I had this this grandmother who was just this incredible, incredible cook. And like her life was food work because that was her, that was her generation. And she comes from this like small island in the middle of the Atlantic and she had this big garden. And so everything she made was so delicious. Like she made soups from water and they were delicious. Like she just... Like that's the closest thing to magic ever. So like I was raised where food was a really important, like almost sort of like the metronome of life, right? Like it was just this like this breakfast and then getting ready for lunch and then getting ready for dinner. And so I knew the joy of food very early on. But it's so interesting that you said, you know, that food was always restrictive because as a young woman in this society, you know,
and
eventually.
You're a model.
Yeah. So eventually it got me. You know, it comes, you know, diet culture and, you know, it comes for every single one of us. And so after this early life of just the joy of food and having, you know, cookies and kale in equal standing, equal measure, like I had to eventually learn to unpack, like, why am I so terrified of eating, quote unquote, too much, of allowing myself to feel fullness, of allowing myself the joy of food, because I've had that joy of food in my life and I had to get back to it and it took a while.
Yeah. I love, by the way, that you said food is the metronome of life. The pacing of it gives us a sense of time. Like that's so romantic.
It is. And you know, it's so funny because life is so fast paced now. And so we very much, I balk at a lot of the food work that my own grandmother would have done, you know, like I don't take 6 hours to bake bread and, you know, those things aren't a part of my everyday life unless I'm like, oh, it's like a long weekend and I just want a project for some reason.
Yeah.
But when you think about the role that food plays and the multiple opportunities that we have to eat every single day. Like if you can make each one of those a little bit more joyful, like it's this happiness and pleasure that we can inject into an otherwise busy, stressful, or even disconnected day. It's like, it doesn't have to take a long time, but it's just sit, be present in the food and like really experience it.
Yeah. You got to take the time to taste the food.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I realize I didn't share my funny coming of vegetarian age story.
Mm-hmm, let's hear it.
When I first found out about yours, I was like, that's so great. I love that it wasn't just like some like radical shift in perception of like the animals or the world. It was like, actually it was for a boy. I just really appreciated that. I was 4 years old and I had a dream that I stepped on an ant and its mom came and killed me. And the next day, my mom was serving hot dogs for lunch or something. Yeah, it was hot dogs. And I had this flash of my dream. And I was like, okay, well, if the aunt's mom came and killed me, wouldn't this hot dog's mom come and kill me? And I didn't eat meat for 25 years to that day. Yeah. It was just like, not going to happen. I was such a defiant kid that, but I was like, really, yeah. And I'm glad I did it. It still is a big part of my life, even though I know I did switch to being an omnivore in my late 20s out of some health reasons. And, you know, I will even probably get listeners to say, whatever, you could have solved everything by vegetables. And I tried. I tried and it wasn't working because I have such food allergies, severe food allergies. So,
yeah. And it's interesting because as a vegan, but also as a registered dietitian, I think people are shocked when they hear me say that I don't expect every single person to go vegan and that it might not actually be the right choice for you, you know, given a history of disordered eating, for example. And, you know, that might feel like another restriction you're placing upon yourself that harms your relationship with food. I've had clients who have come to me wanting to be vegan and they are allergic to cashews, almonds, soy, chickpeas, and lentils. And I was like, I am sorry to tell you, but we're going to put tons and tons of plants on your plates, but you're going to need to eat some chicken and fish every once in a while. You're going to be protein deficient.
Yeah. You know? You named almost all my food allergies. Plus some.
Exactly, right? And I think one of the challenges and one of the like really nuanced areas that I inhabit that the internet does not love is that there's no such thing as good and bad in food. There really isn't. And even when we are making choices in line with our ethics, we have to recognize that we're all just humans doing the best we can at any one moment in time. And like every step you make towards a more environmentally friendly choice, a healthier choice, a more, you know, kind choice, like that's a great thing. We tend to just see what we're not doing as opposed to actually giving ourselves credit for what we are.
That's a real strength-based model of nutrition.
Yeah,
I really love that. Now, I believe your partner is not vegan. Is that correct?
I have a husband.
Tell me about the drama.
A 13-year-old and an 8-year-old who are all omnivores.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, so, you know, it was so interesting because I feel like I got really lucky with my husband because we have a best friend who, if there's not meat on the plate, it's a side dish. Like, that's his thing. That's what he's sticking with. And he's married to someone who grew up in a mostly vegetarian culture. So like that's a whole, I didn't get that. Fantastic. He also doesn't like gamble or play golf or video games. So like, I feel like I win the husband lottery. But so, I mean, he knew like I was always vegetarian and I'm also the cook, like even before I actually did this for a living, because I was very particular as a vegetarian, as a healthy person of like what I ate. And so every once in a while I would check in and he was like, no, 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 I like eating this way. I feel great because he can go out to a restaurant and have a burger or have whatever he likes. He's totally fine with it. And he was raised right. Like if you don't cook, you don't complain. My kids, on the other hand, that's a whole other ball of wax. I have an 8-year old who hates 98% of everything that I cook. And so when other people tell me their kids like, oh, my kids love that muffin recipe or my kids love that sandwich, I was like, can you talk to my kid? Because she does not feel the same way.
That's challenging. And I appreciate the fact that the flexibility within that, like we have to be flexible. And that's one of the things that I think sometimes the nutrition culture lacks flexibility.
Yeah.
Like it thrives off regiment, which isn't really true to the nature of being human.
It's not, but it's very true to our culture in North America. When we think of the origins of our capitalism. Culture, capitalism, patriarchy, like just hierarchical culture, the idea that like there is a right and wrong way to do anything, there is a bad, better, best way to do anything, is really out of line with how we should be thinking about our own nutrition and our own food. And particularly, like social media has made it so much worse because strong emotions, like yes or no, right or wrong, you know, some douchebag sitting in the grocery store telling you that your breakfast cereal is toxic, like that connects with you on a way that me standing up there saying, hey, just so you know, like all foods can fit in a healthy diet, but let's try to eat more veggies, you know?
Yeah,
so it just like, it just doesn't get the clicks.
It does not.
And so people are so messed up with all of these disparate messages. Like you've got the carnivore dudes with their shirts off saying kale will kill you. And then you've got the vegans saying eggs will kill you. You know, just like gloss up and like tell them to eat more butter.
I mean, have you ever gotten into the quote unquote ring with these shirtless hunks of meat eaters?
You know, I haven't, only because I value my sanity. And I just don't have, you know, I think if I was like 2 decades younger,
I might
have the energy to be like, no, I'm right. Let's do this. I've done some debunking videos, and it's kind of funny because I have talked about things like keto and carnivore.
Sure.
And like all the random supplements that we take. And I'm not anti-supplements, but like we are willing to stake like our firstborn on supplement X, saving our lives. And like it just won't. Like that's not how nutrition works.
Say more. I think we got to unpack that because supplements is a multi-trillion dollar business in the...
It is. Yeah. And I have to, you know, I'll come out and say, I hate boxes of any kinds. Like I refuse to fit into like any one box. Like I am an evidence-based health professional. I also keep an open mind. You know, my very first job as a registered dietitian was in a chain of health food stores where, you know, like people came to buy their supplements. So this is my world. And so I balk a little bit when, you know, some evidence-based health professionals essentially paint supplements with a single stroke, you know, like all supplements are useless. Well, no, that's not actually the truth. But I think where we get to with supplements and even nutrition, like one of the ways in which we think about nutrition that's just fundamentally wrong is this one problem, one solution construct.
So
I get questions every single day saying, I have reflux. What food should I eat to make it better? Or what food should I not eat to make it better? I have IBS. What supplement will make it better?
Yeah.
And it's just way more complex than that, right? Like I need to know what's going on with your IBS. Like, are you a stress case like me? Because there's a deep brain gut connection, and maybe it's not a supplement. Maybe gut directed hypnotherapy is actually going to be your jam.
Oh my God. Yes. Hypnotherapy.
Like actually evidence-based, we see that it works. It's super cool. But then same thing with nutrition. People could say, I'm achy and inflamed all the time. So obviously I cut out gluten, right? And I was like, well, no, like, let me look at what you're eating. And if I can see that everything is hyper-processed, you haven't eaten a vegetable since Tuesday, I think probably what we just need to do is like build more color on your plate first, get all those phytochemicals with antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. Like it's so nuanced, it's so complex, and it's so individualized. You can't just go, inflammation, eat turmeric, inflammation, never eat gluten again. Like it does not work that way.
Wouldn't it be nice though?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the same thing in the mental health world. It's like, I'm giving my friend this diagnosis, so they should do these types of things. That's not the current mental health process. But or it's like, I have trauma, therefore I should do this and this and this practice. Yeah. And then it's just gone. When it's like, that practice might not work for you at all.
Yeah.
That approach might not be helpful and it might create more stirring inside. So I appreciate the more expansive, holistic perspective. I want to take a moment to give a loud shout out to The Embody Lab, which is one of the most incredible resources for body-based and somatic therapies. This show is all about healing, and The Embody Lab does exactly that. Whether you're on your own journey of transformation and discovery, or enhancing your skill sets in your career as like a coach or a therapist, a body worker, or really any career where you are supporting other gently used humans, The Embody Lab is your place for deep, inspiring, and impactful workshops, certificates, masterclasses, and an incredible community of like-minded folks. I love The Embody Lab, and so do so many other people that call it a platform to come home to over and over again. The Embody Lab is giving my listeners an exclusive offer, a one-time 10% off code to enhance your embodied well-being. All you have to do is go to theembodylab.com and use the code GENTLYUSE10 at checkout.
And I think that really speaks to even that word holistic, you know, means so many different things to so many different people. And for me, having a holistic approach doesn't mean not listening to evidence-based experts. It's recognizing all of the inputs that play into this. Like if you're exhausted, I can like give you some rhodiola, but if you're sleeping 4 hours a night, the rhodiola ain't going to cut it. Like you need to sleep. Yeah. You know, like I can do a few things with nutrition, but I cannot make up for the 4 hours of sleep you're not getting.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a good point, is that it just has to be more expansive and take into so many considerations. Else it's just not going to work, as you said.
Yeah. And I also think it speaks to one, that we don't give ourselves the time, you know, like even with that food work, but also with wellness. We keep ourselves very, like we work so much and we're doing, I have two kids and like a million activities. Like I get it. Like there's so much to fill your day, but we have to be able to carve out a little bit of time for ourselves, whether that's making a really beautiful salad on Sundays that'll last the week for lunches, or taking that time to go to bed 15 minutes earlier, or buying a huge water bottle and keeping it with you at all times so that you're actually hydrated.
I love those people you just see with like the 2 gallon or, you know, like the massive jug. You got one? Let me see it. That's not big enough. I want like something. Oh, that's bigger than your head. I changed my mind.
It is. It's a 1 liter, 1 quart. Yeah. That's the, yeah, it is ugly, but if it's there, I drink it. And if it's not, I'm the
Sarah. I'm not going to be satisfied till you're carrying around a 4 liter. caravan of water bottles.
I used to, not a 4 liter, a 2 liter. I remember all that time that I spent in Japan and we would just be sitting in like a van in traffic all day, every day going to castings. And we would all like go into the 7-Eleven and get our 2 liters and just like nurse our 2 liter water bottles. Like it was our love child.
This is when you were modeling in Japan.
That was when I was modeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Okay. So here's where it gets really complex, I think, for most of us to sort of hold, because we hear like there's no good or bad, but then what is healthy? What is being healthy?
Yeah. And that's the million-dollar question, right? And I even posed this to my community last week, because it's something I'm thinking a lot about. And it's really like sort of where plant magic was born of, this idea of like, what is healthy? Is it only eating quote unquote healthy foods? No, no way. Does it mean having no disease? Because I think back in my, you know, early days where I was really sort of inspired by this idea of like integrative and functional medicine, it was just said, well, it's the absence of disease. But does that say I have IBS? Does that mean that I can't be healthy because I have irritable bowel syndrome? I think that's pretty wrong. That sounds pretty wrong. Or like,
it's pretty limited. Yeah.
That almost 50% of Canadians who have pre-diabetes or diabetes, that means they can't be healthy. So it's like, how do we define it? And I think for me, I have started defining it by our actions and taking a really holistic viewpoint. So healthy is definitely not a size. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a diagnosis or a lack of diagnoses, but it's like, tell me what you do on a daily basis. And if someone's like, you know what, I take time to go for an after dinner walk every single night, and I make sure to put my phone away before 9 a.m. or like after, you know, dinner or whatever. I make sure that I make half my plate veggies most meals. Of course, sometimes I just want a big bowl of pasta, but like most meals, I do that. I make sure to drink a lot of water. Like that's what I'm looking for. And I think the other thing that's really important in that, so that we don't just create this like rigid rule about any one of those things, is that it's pattern over plate. And this is something I say time and time again, because no one food and no one meal will make or break your health. Mm-hmm. It is the overall pattern of how you move, how you sleep, how you eat that really matters. So maybe this week was all over the place. You had a massive deadline and you got takeout like every single night. But like dollar cost averaging over the month, you're like, that was just that week. And then I went back to like cooking again. And like I got meal prep delivery at home in order to have a home cooked meal. Like it doesn't have to be so rigid.
And we don't have to shame ourselves, I imagine.
You know, because when was the last time that actually was helpful?
I don't remember.
Yeah. You know, maybe in the short term, maybe for like 24 hours, but yeah. I don't know about you. When we feel stressed or anxious or low, most of us are trained to reach for comfort. And how do we reach for comfort? We reach the comfort through food.
Why do we think that is? Like, why is food the co-regulator or the self-regulation tool that so many of us turn to?
I think for so many reasons. One, it's a learned behavior because, you know, when we were kids and we scraped our knee and, you know, our parent put a Band-Aid on it, they're like, do you want to go for ice cream? You know, we started to sort of like connect those moments of feeling unwell with feeling better through food. But I also think like just from like a sort of like a metabolic basis, when we consume a meal that's rich in carbohydrates, we raise our serotonin. That's just naturally what happens. And like our bodies are smart. They're like, wait, when I ate that big fettuccine Alfredo, like all of a sudden I got like serotonin cozy. I want more of that.
And I'm just kind of vaguely remembering from my days in pediatrics, the sucking reflex that babies do, you know, as part of taking in the breast for breastfeeding, it releases endorphins or it releases something good. I'll have to check. I can't remember. It's endorphins and something else. It's probably like dopamine. Let's be real. Oh, and oxytocin. And so don't quote me on that. I'll figure it out later. But some it releases some good shit in the body that makes you kind of feel soothed.
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, many people will hear that and then think, oh, well, that's something to be controlled, you know, to be aware of and to try and beat down. That like when I'm sad, I never have a scoop of ice cream, or when I'm not feeling good, I never make pasta. And there's been so many, particularly now that we're aware, like I grew up with like women's magazines and like fitness magazines just like shouting at me, like lose 10 pounds, like all this kind of stuff, you know, by Labor Day, that big thing. And I think as we've become more aware of it and started trying to unpack it, it's really interesting, like the intuitive eating movement, the health at any size movement, all of these things have become really important pieces of the discourse about like why we eat and how we eat. But then I think coming back to what you said, well, then like for the person saying, yeah, but like, how do I know if I'm healthy? Yeah. And like, what does that mean for us? Like that's... It can be super confusing. And I understand that as a dietitian. I understand why we want these really clear, definitive answers and how annoying it is for someone like me to be like, all foods fit. And you're like, yeah, but tell me like how many Cokes I can have a week.
Yeah. And there's a reality of like attune inwards and notice.
Yeah.
The wisdom of your being, your body, will reflect back. If you feel like shit after every time you eat a donut or eat an apple, it doesn't matter. There's information there.
Exactly. And I think I love that idea. Food is information for your body. And then your body also responds with information about that food. And, you know, it can get a little messy in terms of delayed reactions and things with certain conditions. But one of the sort of staples that I rely on as a dietitian, like how do we make this make sense, is by adopting an attitude of more.
Yeah.
So there are very few absolutes in nutrition. One, drink more water. Two, almost everyone, you know, unless you're carrying around that like 4 liter Stanley, like you're good, maybe lay off a bit. But like everyone else probably needs to drink a little bit more water. And two, we can all eat more plants.
Mm. Why?
Because all of the dietary patterns that we have really good data for, things like the MIND diet, the Mediterranean diet, the DASH diet, those like really evidence-based ones.
The blue zone diet.
The only thing they have in common is that they are tons of whole plant foods.
Okay.
So these are
what
the fruits.
What does that mean exactly? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So these are fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, whole grains, and legumes. Okay. Like if it grew out of the ground, we want to eat more of those because they contain... Well, typically, plant foods are nutrient dense, not energy dense. So we're a pretty sedentary society. We like to pretend that our bodies don't exist and we just like sustain our brains, but they exist. And so we don't need a ton of energy, most of us. If you're a marathoner, absolutely you do. But we do need all of the micronutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, the like phytochemicals that help our cells mop up damage for being stress cases all the time. So plants have tons of those nutrients, but they don't typically contain as much energy or calories as like hyper-processed foods or like a big wheel of brie. So already they're sort of setting us up for that balance, energy balance. But the other reason why they're so important is when we focus on whole plant foods, what we're eating fewer of is hyper-processed foods. And this is not to paint them with some demonic breath, like, I love me a Coke Zero or an Oreo from time to time. Like, I love them. But as a society, a huge proportion of our food intake is these foods. And for some of us, it's because we don't have time. We're a single parent. We're working two jobs. We just got to put food on the table. These foods are also very affordable and grocery price. So again, it's not about saying these foods are bad. It's about if it's within our means, we want to keep them in balance. More whole. Fewer hyper-processed, so that we get more nutrition versus more energy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well said. Now, you have spoken about the cult of wellness and the side effects of like sometimes wellness making us feel worse. Can you talk to that? Because I think that's a pretty radical and interesting idea.
Yeah. And it comes from a place where I feel like I'm a little bit of a, you know, like reformed wellness person.
Sure,
because back in, you know, when I was a teenager in the 90s, wellness was transformational. You know, being that sort of like teens, early 20s, out in the world for myself, what is healthy, learning to take care of myself. The wellness movement coming up seemed incredible, where they talked about things that, you know, health isn't just the absence of disease, that, you know, nutrition is transformational in your health, which back then was like mind-blowing because many physicians at that time, you could get a diagnosis and they wouldn't say, oh, well, nutrition has nothing to do with it. Just like take your medication. So like the fact that nutrition was important for health was like a mind-blowing concept that wellness brought us. And also this idea of taking in traditional medicine, which unfortunately more often than not became appropriation as opposed to appreciation. But the idea of like traditional medicine systems, yoga, meditation, that all these things have value beyond what we can necessarily measure. So wellness meant to do good. But then we live in this very capitalist society where we just try and mess everything. We just mess everything up so we can make more money. And wellness has become, again, this very hierarchical structure that is, you know, like this breakfast cereal is quote unquote inflammatory because it has, I don't know, preservative X. Mm-hmm. Even though that breakfast cereal is made from whole grains, has a bunch of fiber, which is actually really important for your microbiome. But they'll say, this is awful, buy this one, this other like organic gluten-free flax thing, which honestly, I buy a ton of myself. But what we don't see in this messaging is they're saying, okay, this really affordable breakfast cereal, which is actually really nutritious. It's got iron, it's got fiber, all those good things, isn't as good as the one that is three times the price. Mm. Overwhelmingly, that's the messaging. Like, mm-hmm. did you know that our soils are depleted and even fruits and vegetables are not as nutritious as they used to be? Now you need this $120 greens powder. Mm. You know, and we don't realize the harm.
Wait, can you hold on? I'm just going to order that green powder.
Yeah. It's really good. Make sure you use my influencer code so I get 30%
of the
profits.
For sure.
You know, so we don't realize how harmful that messaging is. And I think a lot, particularly influencers, like health professionals should know better. Like I reserve a special place in hell for those health professionals that like push that messaging. But like influencers are like, look at me, I'm cute in my yoga pants. Like this supplement is awesome. Like I get they don't understand the impact. Yeah. But we see increased eating disorders. And we know that wellness messaging and restrictive diets lead to more disordered eating. And so many of the messages we see in wellness are like, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. Don't eat gluten, don't eat soy, don't eat, I don't know, like anything but organic kale and, you know, like structured water with this special crystal that I like swirled in it before.
By the way, can we just have a moment for crystal water with crystals in it, y'all? You don't want to consume what's in the crystal. You don't want it. It's not meant to be consumed. I was in Bali recently and there were these crystals in the water. I was like, does anyone actually know that we don't want that shit in our body? Meant for the earth, not for our bellies.
I know, but it's cute.
I mean... Do you have a crystal water bottle?
I do not have a crystal water bottle. I 100% have like crystals by my bedside.
I'm down for that. I'm down for that. No. I'm down for that. It's just like they're not meant to be eaten.
No, they're not meant to be eaten at all.
You can do whatever you want with them. I've seen them made out for dildos. I am open to a lot of things with these crystals, just not consumption, especially in your water.
I would maybe add also putting them up the hoo-ha because they are porous, right?
I know.
The yoni eggs, I mean, if we really want to get into it, but like those, I was like, those are porous. They can harbor those microbes. Let's talk about microbiomes for a second.
Let's talk about that shit. Go on. Talk about the micro porous hoo-ha dilly eggs.
Yeah. You know, I'm always communicating and like, engaging in these spaces that are really ripe for misinformation and like just like wellness malarkey. Like I got my start in anti-inflammatory nutrition and now I do digestive health, I do gut health. And so it's wild the things that people will say. The gut microbiome is so cool. It's like one of the reasons, like it really energized me learning. It's the coolest. Like I really wish I took microbiology in my undergrad. But, you know, talking about how microbes can influence inflammatory processes, how they can influence your nervous system in the gut, but and especially being in this space, like the amount of ways that people get it wrong, like people will say 90% of the serotonin is not in your brain, it's in your gut. I say that too, because it's a really cool, fun stat. And then they're like, so don't eat gluten because it'll ruin your microbiome and it will give you depression. Like it's wild what people are saying.
It's true that if you're an asshole, it's because you have fucked up microbiome, right?
Yeah, totally, 100%. Yeah,
okay. And then you should put a crystal in there?
Yeah, and what you need to do is you need to test your microbiome for the asshole microbe.
Oh.
And then I can sell you the anti-asshole probiotic to fix it.
Oh my God. It's the same link as the other one?
Same link.
Same link. This show is also brought to you by the absolutely stunning and powerful tools for transformation that are created by Omala. Oof, even the name Omala transports you to a place of flow and vitality. These are some of my favorite products ever, like an amazing color-changing yoga mat that responds to your temperature and presence and reflects back your posture in real time. They have this incredible smelling skin balm candle that heats up to activate all the essential oils and vitamins that your skin has been craving for. I mean, look, if I could live in a giant bath of this candle, I would 100% do it. They also have these journals that lead you into a profound insight, and then you can plant those journals to create a stunning flower garden. I mean, damn, if that's not both deep and inventive, I don't know what is. If you're someone who desires to live in a luxurious flow of life and who believes in transformative wellness, then you have to check out Omala. Omala is giving my listeners an exclusive discount to treat yourself to something that is as special as you, boo. All you have to do is go to omala.com, that's omala.com, use the discount code DrScott10 at checkout, and a portion of every purchase goes to an incredible charity. You got this. I appreciate we're having fun with this because it is really hard to see what's behind the veil. Yeah. And there are a lot of really smart folks out there who are giving advice. There are also folks who have different experiences and are basing their sharing off their experience, which is cool too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's tricky. It's not clean. Yeah. You know, it's the same thing. Like, who is sponsoring the news you are watching? Who is sponsoring the news you're watching? Yeah. And how much of the control of what's being delivered, how it's being delivered, and how long it's being delivered is influenced by maintaining that sponsorship?
Yeah.
Same thing with food. It's not clean.
No.
On social media, it's not clean.
No, it's not. And I think I have a lot of empathy for people who are trying to navigate this because as a dietitian, I am the first person to say that the best way to consume your nutrition information is one-on-one with a dietitian and also recognizing that so many people don't have access to that.
Yeah.
They can't afford to see a one-on-one dietitian or they don't have insurance that covers a dietitian. So we're out here in the wild buying books, going on Instagram or TikTok, reading blogs and saying, this is how I need to get my information. So I think it's really helpful because I can't evaluate information about neurobiology and psychology, even though I'm a dietitian and I know how to evaluate information. Like, it's not my area of expertise. And so how does someone navigating these spaces figure this out? I think one of the most important things that people can keep in mind is that if the person who is talking is leading with fear, they do not actually have your best interest in mind. They are not thinking about their health. They're thinking about their clicks. You know?
And to reinforce that, y'all, there's a great article out there that talks about the three emotions that get the most clicks. Guess what emotion is number one? Fear.
Yeah.
Fear, anger, and basically like awe. But like two out of the three are really about enticing you, activating you. And that is how, from a neurological perspective, that is the mechanism that draws your attention in. We know that if we can create more stress response, we can capture your attention because that is the mechanism of attention, neurologically speaking.
So, you know, straight out of the gate, if nutrition information makes you feel bad about yourself, unfollow, like block, like less of this immediately. And look for people who really, A, share research and share research that seems to be in line with other research-based professionals, and then also who speak in a language of more, because that's what we need to do. You don't have to stop eating Oreos forever in order to be healthy. You need to eat more of certain things. We need to put more vegetables on our plate. We need to put more high-fiber proteins like beans. And so when the information you see is about how to eat more of these foods, that's probably your clue. You're like, this person might actually have my nutrition and best interest in heart, as opposed to those other people who just want to keep you like hooked and entertained.
Yeah. And I will say I do enjoy entertainment. So there's that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's entertainment.
Of course, we love it.
And I want to normalize, it's hard to navigate. Like, I'm not a dietitian. I have a doctor in front of my name. So supposedly I should know this shit. I don't know. Like, it's hard to navigate. Like, I get pulled into my friend's and their colleagues on social media, I'm like, wait, I don't remember any of this from school. I guess I must be right. And it's truly, it's like, there's a lot of good intention out there. And it's not easy to navigate what's sort of clickbait and what is supportive to you. And I just want to really normalize that. It's hard. Yeah.
And normalize that, like, really boring basic stuff is actually the most transformational. Like,
yeah,
I know. And that's not what, it's not shiny. It's not exotic. But one of the most foundational pieces of advice that I give is to use the most yawn-inducing dietitian strategy ever, which is something called the plate method. Yeah. That if you're building a recipe or if you're building a plate, that like half your plate is covered in fruits and vegetables, a quarter of your plate is in a whole grain or a starchy vegetable, and a quarter of your plate is in some sort of protein-rich food. That seems so ridiculous. Like, there's no way that that's going to do anything for me. But if you actually, if you do it for a week, my challenge to you is do it for a week and see how you feel. Because most of us aren't eating that way. Like I said, like, sometimes you just want a big bowl of pasta. Do it. Live your life. But like, as a pattern, yeah, that will instantly bring you into energy balance, that will instantly ensure that you're not missing any little micronutrient for cellular nutrition, like any of that. It's going to fight inflammation. Like, all of these good things come from just what you choose to put on your plate. And like, the ratio, like, bigger, smaller plate is going to depend on like your body size, your activity level, but just those like basic ratios are transformational.
I love that. Thank you for making that so accessible and easy to follow and to normalize. Like, yeah, it doesn't come with glitter and, you know, like fireworks, but it's really achievable.
I know. It's not a $21 Air One smoothie. I get it. But
oh
like,
my God, let's have a moment for Air One smoothies. I'm just kidding. But for those of you who don't know, I've mentioned it many times on this show where you can go to this grocery store in LA and buy a $50 coffee or not.
Yeah. I love that place. Like, every time I go to Los Angeles, I go to Erewhon because, I mean, I still love this stuff. And I think that's the thing is, like, I am in wellness. Like, I love new ingredients. I love all of this cool, fun stuff. But I keep that in check. It's fun stuff.
Yeah.
It is sort of like the glitter on the cupcake. It's not the cupcake. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's expensive glitter, to be clear. It's, as my friend says, where rich people go to... my friend says it's where rich people go to complain how expensive it is.
Mm-hmm.
How expensive groceries are. And it's not very accessible. So going back to, like, I really appreciate accessible because the majority of the population, at least here in the United States, can't necessarily afford these extreme nutritional trends. And it's like, I've been in conversation with a lot of friends about, like, not only do they feel like they're harming themselves or their children because they can't afford it, but there's so much shame around it. And I'm like, ooh, my loves, no, that's not where we want to go.
And who does that serve, right? That's not serving us. That's serving the people who sort of deliver this aspirational lifestyle. Health should not be aspirational. It should just be our inherent state.
Yeah. And I think one of the things just to name about, like, look, I know a lot of the influencers that people might, I've either had them on the show or like I know them in person and may present as one way on the gram, but they're super flagellant, yo. They're farting up all the time or whatever, you know, like they're humans and they don't feel good and sometimes. And it's not like they're not some superheroes or superhumans that emerged because of this. And I think some of them are really honest in that way and others, you know, it doesn't serve the brand to be that transparent. So I'm going to be transparent
about it.
So speaking of Mythbusters, I know you do a lot of myth busting on your socials and stuff. And we kind of have a fun game around that our producer created for us to play. I actually don't know the game. I was just told that I'm going to play it, but the game was given to you and you're going to do two truths and a lie. Is that the game we're playing?
Yeah, just so you can see what I'm up against in internet nutrition. You know,
to be clear,
I endorse none of these. These are all the worst diets on the planet, but a bunch of them are real diets. So
I'm going to pick what's out there on the market, not the ones you support, but what's out there. And which ones are like just made up cop craziness? Okay.
I've got five rounds. So five in rounds. Each one, there's three diets. Two of them are real. One of them is a lie.
Can it's I genius. Make up my own as well?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. I love changing the rules. Okay. I am supposed to follow. Okay.
Are you ready for round one? Okay.
I am ready for round one.
Round one. Number one, the cookie diet. This diet involves eating special cookies designed to suppress hunger, allowing dieters to consume fewer calories without feeling starved. Despite its dream come true premise for cookie lovers, it is highly restrictive and an unbalanced approach to nutrition. That's number one, the cookie diet.
Okay.
Number two, the baby food diet. Promoted as a way to control portion size and calorie intake, this diet involves replacing one or more adult meals with jars of baby food. The name alone raises eyebrows, and while it might reduce calorie intake, it's not a sustainable or nutritionally sound strategy for adults. Number two, the baby food diet. Okay. Last one, the Sleeping Beauty diet. Based on the premise that you can't eat while you're asleep, this diet involves sleeping for extended periods to avoid eating. It's an extreme method that ignores the importance of a balanced diet and regular physical activity. Where's the lie?
Okay. I know that number one is true. I have a celebrity friend who used to order these like nutrition protein heavy cookies, and that's all she would eat always. So I'm going to say number one is true.
Okay.
At least true for me. And number two, I believe I've heard of this baby food diet. If not, I have eaten baby food as an adult and enjoyed it. So that was true for me too. I'm going to say number three is the lie.
You might be hard to stump because Sleeping Beauty is the lie.
Yes. Don't fuck with me.
All right. I know. I remember a very popular celebrity trainer who I was a big fan of in the day that actually told people they should consume baby food.
Yes.
In addition to working out like 60 to 90 minutes a day, which well done you. Okay. Round two. Diet number one, the dinosaur diet. Inspired by the eating habits of prehistoric... If you laugh, I'm not going to be able to do it.
Wait, is this just the paleo diet, y'all? Okay, keep going. Okay.
Well, you need new terms, right? Paleo is old. We need a new term. Okay. So this diet suggests a bizarre combination of raw vegetation and lean meats, claiming it will restore primal energy and encourage weight loss. It's all about eating big, but with foods that would supposedly make a T-Rex envious. So the dinosaur diet.
Could we just also name how great you are at reading scripts or whatever it was given to you? Like, did you do the audio for your book?
I did an audio for the last book. Plant Magic doesn't have as much like upfront, so I don't think we'll do an audio book, but I do have a podcast. I love to talk.
I know, I'm going to listen to your podcast, but can you read me Plant Magic and just like leave me voice notes on like what's up?
Yes,
just
I
like
will do it.
Okay, great. Okay, round two.
Okay,
dinosaur.
Round two. We got dinosaur. The tapeworm diet. As shocking as it sounds, this diet involves ingesting a parasite to lose weight. The idea is that the tapeworm will consume some of the food you eat, allowing you to lose weight without changing your diet or exercise habits. This dangerous and highly discouraged method is as insane as its name suggests. I once got a tapeworm in Thailand, and I can confirm that it will eat your food.
Same. And I would do it again if I needed to go to prom. Okay.
Number three, so the tapeworm diet. Number three, the five-bite diet. This extreme diet encourages eating whatever you want, but only 5 bites of it twice a day. The idea is to drastically limit calorie intake, but it lacks nutritional balance and can lead to health issues. And immediately makes me think of The Devil Wears Prada, where she says she just tries not to eat anything. And when she thinks she's going to pass out, she's going to eat a block of cheese.
How big are the bites?
Just five bites. So I feel like...
We're not talking nibble. We're talking about bite, like regular size bites.
Yeah, we're talking like real bites. Like not a tiny nibble, not a huge mouthful.
Okay. Dinosaur diet. I don't know if it's named that always, but it's definitely reminiscent of other things that are very true in accordance with paleo. Here's the thing about the tapeworm diet is I imagine folks would go for it because, it's like... the pre-Ozempic experience. You know what I mean? Like before we had Ozempic, we had tapeworms. So I'm going to say true to tapeworms.
Okay.
And the third one again is false? Okay. Question mark?
So the five-bite diet is true.
Oh,
and the dinosaur diet is close enough to paleo to make it sound true, but not a real thing.
So the tapeworm diet is real.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Wow.
Tricky, tricky, tricky. I do actually remember the 5-bite diet. Now that you repeated it, I remember hearing about it. Okay. I'm still going to say I won that round, but okay. Let's go to the next round.
Absolutely. This is your show. These are your rules. You need to live in your truth. Okay. Round 3.
I'm living in it. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Cabbage soup diet. This diet promises quick weight loss by consuming almost nothing but homemade cabbage soup for the week. It's monotonous, lacks nutritional balance, and the weight loss is often just water weight.
I already know that's true because I did it when I was a dancer. Okay. So.
Right, I also have to say, because I am making a cabbage soup recipe for my blog, like a really delicious one, that when I was looking up the keyword research, I was shocked by the hundreds of thousands of people looking up cabbage soup for weight loss. So that one's a gimme.
That one's a tricky. All right. Yeah. Let's do this.
All right. Let's do this. Smackdown. All right. Number 2, the shadow diet. This diet advocates for eating only foods that don't cast a shadow under direct light, supposedly because they are lighter and thus less calorie dense. Think clear broths, certain jellies, or thinly sliced vegetables. Number 3, the breatharian diet. Proponents of this diet claim that it's possible to live on light and air alone, foregoing the need for physical food. This concept is not only scientifically disproven, but also dangerously misleading. Where's the lie?
Okay. Number 2 is the lie, because I know breatharians.
Like, personally, you obviously don't invite them for dinner, but...
I still invite them for dinner because I think it's entertaining and they're good at Yahtzee. But yeah, and it's more crab for me. So, you know.
Fair.
Number 2 is the lie.
Okay. Yeah, number 2 is the lie. Okay, round 4. The cotton ball diet. This diet involves eating cotton balls soaked in juice to fill the stomach without consuming actual food. It's extremely dangerous and can lead to serious gastrointestinal blockages.
Okay.
Number 2, the werewolf diet. Also known as the lunar diet. It involves fasting according to the lunar calendar with the belief that the moon's phases affect our bodies in ways that can be leveraged for weight loss. It's an unconventional approach with no scientific backing. And then finally, the rainbow diet. According to this trend, eating foods of only one color per day can detoxify the body and promote weight loss. For example, white day might include chicken, cauliflower, and white rice, while green day is not only a popular band, but also focuses on leafy vegetables and green fruits.
White's not in the rainbow! There's no W in Roy G. Biv.
No one said the people creating these diets were smart.
Okay. One I know is true.
Mm.
As dancers, we used to call it the toilet paper diet, and we all did it. I do not recommend it. And, oh God, 2 and 3. Okay, so the lunar eclipse-y Wolverine diet or whatever, or the rainbow diet. I'm going to say the... Oh God, they're both so good and entertaining. I'm going to say number 2 is the lie, and the rainbow diet is true, question mark?
The werewolf diet is true. The rainbow diet is made up.
Y'all, I am just impressed with the creativity out there in the world.
But, and then if you really want to bring this back to wellness, so think about like the werewolf diet, the lunar diet, and some very real trends that are connected in the same way, like particularly if you menstruate, seed cycling and like tuning your nutrition to like the phases of your ovulation, which is also very not based in science whatsoever. And, you know, just gives one more thing to a menstruating person to have to deal with in their month, which we don't have time for. So, you know, like it seems wild, too wild to be true. And then there's like, oh, no, people are talking about this and doing this. Okay,
They're doing it. All right.
All right. Here we go. Let's see what you're 2 for 2, right?
I'm 4 for 4. Yeah, no, it's my rules, my game.
4 for 4. Let's make it an even 5. Okay.
This is what game night would be like with me, just so we're clear. And why my parents... And the therapist I had as a kid made me play the ungame, which had no winners. But that's not what we're doing now. So continue. I have won this game so far, and I will continue to win it.
Let's do it. It is a pleasure to witness. Okay. The vision diet. Originating from Japan, this diet involves wearing blue tinted glasses that supposedly make food look less appealing, thus reducing the amount of food consumed. The theory is that the color blue is an appetite suppressant, the vision diet. Next, okay. The five-bite diet. This extreme diet encourages eating whatever you want, but only 5 bites of it twice a day. Did we just do this whole one already?
We did. That is a free win for me.
That is a free win for you. Okay, so it's up to the vision diet and the joyful diet. The joyful diet is combining laughter yoga sessions with a diet of quote-unquote happy foods that boost serotonin levels. This diet claims to use the power of laughter to stimulate digestion and improve nutrient absorption, leading to weight loss. So vision diet or joyful diet?
Okay, so I was once teaching a yoga retreat, and the retreat in the yoga studio next door was doing a laughing yoga workshop, and they were just like howling and screaming. And while I could imagine them trying to take it into food, I imagine they would quickly asphyxiate from trying to eat said food and laugh at the same time. So I'm going to say that one's false.
It is false. Yeah, you nailed it. 5 out of 5.
Thank you for protecting my ego. How can I ever repay you?
We'll play the same, but with like psychological concepts, and then I will also get 5 out of 5.
Yes, we will do this. We are all winners here on the Gently Used Human podcast. Absolutely. For sure. Speaking of winners, I wanted to say thank you so much for your amazing presence and your book. Where can people get Plant Magic? Where can they consume it? Where can they cook it? Where can they chew the pages of it? Whatever they want with their book.
Yeah, so you can find Plant Magic wherever books are sold. So if you want to walk down to your local indie and order it up, or you can go to all the usual peeps, the Barnes & Nobles, the Amazons of the world. It is there, delicious, and waiting for you.
And I happen to know friends that are friends of yours who have cooked your recipes, and I even, you know, have one in my house who cooks your recipes sometimes, and it is really good. It is really, really good. Thank you for making food good. Just thank you for doing that for the world.
Foreign concept that you should actually enjoy what you're eating and like crave vegetables.
Who knew? And thank you for making food sexy like that. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And accessible. Where else can people find more of you in addition to your books?
All the internet things. So I have a blog with tons of free recipes and very nerdy, very evidence-based blog posts on nutrition, which is DesireeRD, like registered dietitian.com. And then you can find me on the Instagram, Desiree Nielsen RD, on TikTok, all that good stuff.
Amazing. Please go hang out with Desiree. Get some recipes, cooks, and be joyful with food, my friends. And thank you so much, Desiree, for being such a magic person yourself and bringing that to the world. And thank you all to you, my lovely, gently used humans out there, for listening in. And we will connect next time. Thank you for listening to the Gently Used Human podcast with Dr. Scott Lyons and friends. Visit gentlyused.com for fun extras, including submitting your questions for advice from a Midwestern mom. And don't forget to spill the tea and gossip about the show with all your friends and frenemies. And show some love by giving us 5 stars and leaving a review in your favorite apps. This helps us connect with all the other gently used humans out there. Oh, and by the way, you look fierce today.